Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll catch up with Paul Charchian in a little bit. Preview this football weekend and Thursday night football tonight. Plus, what if we had the playoff committee or the playoff scenario of college football in the NFL? What would that look like right now? And speaking of which, the committee's been doing such a good job that now that we're on the one-yard line, we better make sure we don't screw this thing up just yet. We'll get to all that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And you can always get in touch with us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Head on over to our website where you can click on our show page and there leave a comment for the show. Find the latest versions of the show podcasted. You can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You can always text the show 843-608-1734, or you can always give us a call 843-721-9500. Admittedly, I did not make the wisest eating decision, I'm sure, eating some peanut butter crackers during the commercial break. Peanut butter, that's not good. It's hard. In fact, that became a challenge recently by like Ludacris, putting peanut butter in your mouth and trying to rap. Right? It like sticks to your gums. And it's hard. So I'm working through that. Peanut butter is probably not the best thing to eat when you have to talk for a living. Right? At least not to do it when you're supposed to be talking. Hey, I think the committee's done a pretty good job. We got the final playoff rankings the other night. We're heading into the conference championship weekend. We will know our playoff field here in, 72 hours, something like that? Within the next 96 hours? And I think to this point, the playoff committee has done a good job. There's little things you can critique, you know, like putting Michigan ahead of Michigan State, Ohio State versus Oregon, this and that. But we've arrived at this point now where things really have. It's become a cliche, but, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason because they're true, and that's why you say them all the time. Things have worked themselves out in college football. And I think heading into this weekend, we have a pretty clear picture. And you know the scenarios. If Alabama wins, they're in. If they lose, they're out. Right, and the next in line, Oklahoma State. They got to win on Saturday. You know, they could be one of those fourth teams. If they lose and Alabama loses and some things go their way, okay, then here's an opportunity for Notre Dame to come along. Put them in the playoff. So I think the committee, for all the, you know, all the responses that they get, and we always love to complain as football fans about this committee, and usually maybe they don't do the best job. But this year, I really don't think there's been much to complain about. I think everything's just fine. I think right now we have the four best teams in the top four. We have the next best teams right outside, you know, looking in. And depending on how things go this week, it should figure itself out. But with that said, we did get this sound from Gary Barta the other night, the chairman of the committee, after this whole process on Tuesday. And I did not get to this on the show yesterday. You've probably heard it by now, making the rounds. But for Notre Dame, the concern now of them being punished for not having their head coach anymore, Brian Kelly. You know, the committee, I think, has done such a good job. We're on the one-yard line. We're about to knock this thing in. You know, it's like third and goal at the one. You're about to pound it in here, get the touchdown. This thing is all going to play itself out here in the next 48 hours. We're going to have a playoff field. Everything's been going well. Don't screw it up now. And one of those screw-ups would be to punish Notre Dame for no longer having their head coach. Here was Gary Barta the other night on ESPN after the playoff rankings came out talking about Notre Dame, and if now they're going to be impacted or could be impacted here moving forward because they no longer have their head coach.
Notre Dame at number six, their resume is complete, so there's no projecting about whether they might win or lose a game. Their season is over. Yet that resume changes without Brian Kelly now that he's moved on to LSU. It's in the selection committee protocol. You can evaluate that. How do you anticipate that being evaluated in the final ranking process?
Well, you make a good point, Reese, that committee obviously was aware of all the coaching changes while we were going through the rankings. This week, it didn't apply because the games had occurred, and we evaluated based on those games. Once the championship games wrap up, to your point, our protocol does include the ability for the committee to consider a player or a coach not being available, and should that have an effect on the outcome of a game, that can be considered. At this point, we'll have to wait and see how that factors in, but it is one of the criteria that's now added to strength of schedule, to head-on-head competition and winning championships, etc.
Gary Barta talking about Notre Dame on Tuesday. I think that's a ridiculous thought process. Couple of thoughts on this. Right now, number one, and we discussed this yesterday on the show, but this is the lousy timing of this whole thing, that you have Notre Dame losing their coach as they're competing for a spot in the playoff. Cincinnati looks like they're going to hold on to Luke Fickell, but there are at least rumors, speculation, and a possibility that Cincinnati could have lost their coach this week. And we almost were in a situation where you had two of the top six teams could have been without their head coaches. Or maybe you'd have a situation where Fickell gets hired by Notre Dame and you take one coach from this team and you put him over there, and then how does that impact how you view the playoff race? Two teams are without their head coaches, but one of those head coaches with another team, and that would have been messy. That's not going to be the case. Notre Dame promoted defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman. More on that in a moment. But I think just from the early signing period, it makes all this a mess. And I was glad. I always assumed I was in the minority for some reason, because I guess just the buzz around it, people I always thought seemed to love the early signing period. Then I heard a lot of talk this week of people putting it down and saying this is silly. The whole timeline, the whole process, how college football is set up, which I was happy to hear. I've said it since day one. This early signing period makes no sense to me, at least not to put it now. What are we doing here? It's what the NFL does so well, spacing out their calendar, that every month there's something different. They're never competing with themselves. College football chose to compete with themselves, where you have the playoff and recruiting here going on at the same time. The two biggest days of the year are interfering with one another. And then on top of that, one of the side effects is what we just went through this week, where you have to have Brian Kelly. He's got to leave. He's got to go recruit at LSU. Leaves his team, you know, while they are trying to fight for still a national championship. It's a bad look for college football. Kelly, there's not much more he could have done. I know everybody is ripping Brian Kelly this week. I don't blame him. He took a better job, and you got to go now because of the recruiting. It's the system. Right, don't hate the player, hate the game. You can't fault Brian Kelly. That's what he has to do because of this ridiculous setup in college football. But every year, this time of the year, right, certain things you get used to. You know it's December because of certain things. You see the Christmas lights go up. You hear the Christmas music. People have the decorations up. You go into a store, right, and it's very Christmassy. It gets a little cooler. You think, oh, yep, this feels like the holiday season. This feels like December. And another aspect of that is me having to rant about the college football playoff and how it is, or at least should be, the most deserving teams, not the quote-unquote best teams. I couldn't care less if you have your head coach or not. If you played well enough to be one of the most deserving teams, then you should be in the playoff, whether your coach is there or not. The playoff field should always be most deserving. And my comparison always is, if you were at your job and you were the best worker, right, there was a promotion, almost like Horrible Bosses where Jason Bateman thinks he's going to get the promotion, right? You're the clear-cut guy. You've been the best worker there, at least in your department. You have better sales numbers. You work harder. You take less time off. You're working more overtime than this other guy. You've been more successful. You've had all around, you've had a better year. But when it's time to promote somebody, they promote the other guy. And you think, what the heck just happened? I am the best salesman you have here. I have a better year than that guy. I've had a better career with this company. And simply they just say, well, you know, we like his potential. We think he can be better in this role. Yeah, you've performed better. You have been the better employee or salesman this year, but we think he can be better. Right? We like his potential. That's what we always talk about. Well, you know, we want the four best teams. Doesn't matter what actually happened during the season. We think they're actually one of the four best teams. Right? We think he's best for the job. It's like, well, I showed you throughout the year I'm better than him at the job. Same idea on college football. Now, in this scenario, if Notre Dame were to be punished for losing Brian Kelly, it'd be like if you were in line for that promotion and then your assistant took a job elsewhere. Or maybe, depending on the industry or your company, maybe you have a secretary and they leave the company. and your boss says, yeah, we were going to give you the promotion, but, you know, then you lost your assistant. We don't think you do as good of a job, so we're not going to give you the promotion anymore. Right, imagine how peeved you'd be. That's kind of what we're saying in Notre Dame. Like, yeah, you would be one of the four most deserving teams, but now you lost your head coach, so we don't think you deserve to be there. You're not one of the four best teams anymore, regardless of everything you accomplished this year. Now, take away Brian Kelly. Nah, you're not a playoff team. I think it's silly, and it's ridiculous. Now, we may not get to this situation anyways, but that should never even be a thought. Those words should have never come out of Gary Barta's mouth on Tuesday. Should never be a consideration. And this team's one of the four best, but they just lost their head coach, so we can no longer include them or take them anymore. They have to be punished for that. Which is a lot like a recruiting violation, where the NCAA frequently will punish the wrong people, usually the kids instead of the coach. Some school will break some rules, the coach then leaves. And who's left for the punishment? The players that weren't even involved in the recruiting scandal. Because these punishments usually take like 5 years to hand them down. And now it's like, okay, you guys can't go play in the postseason. And all these kids weren't even at the school when that stuff happened. And the coach already left for another job anyways. I was like, well, we didn't do anything wrong. Now we're getting punished? It's the same idea here. Players have had nothing to do with this. And Brian Kelly has had to leave because of the ridiculous setup that the sport has created. And then the response from Gary Barta on Tuesday was, well, yeah, they don't have their head coach. Sorry, guys. We're going to have to knock you for that. It's like, what are you talking about? We didn't leave for another job. We went out there. We've played the games. We've won the games. And you're going to dock us for not having our head coach anymore? Like that has anything to do with the players? And by the way, let's not forget, it was just a few years ago, not that long ago, when Ohio State had to rely on Cardale Jones, their third-string quarterback. And I think that season worked out pretty well for them. And that was before the playoff. And that's more important, right? Falling to your backup and your third-string quarterback, I think, plays a larger role than the head coach. Because at Notre Dame, the offensive coordinator, Tommy Reese, is still there. He calls the plays. Marcus Freeman, the defensive coordinator, he runs the defense. Brian Kelly's a really good coach, don't get me wrong. But at this point, it may be more impactful if you lost your starting quarterback than you lose your head coach when you have those two good coordinators. The committee has done such a great job. Now, I don't know if we're going to get to this point. Notre Dame right now is not in the top four. If these teams, certain teams, win out, they won't get into the top four. But if that plays a role in the deciding factor at all, right, if that plays a role in your decision process, like, well, they don't have their head coach anymore, that's ridiculous. It should always be about most deserving instead of just the four best. And when you talk about deserving, you look at the full year of work, regardless of whether the head coach is still there or not. They won the games this year to deserve that spot. Plus, the NCAA usually gets this wrong, but don't punish the wrong people. Don't punish the kids for the actions that, you know, of the coaches that they had nothing to do with. It's like when you hold the actions of parents against their kids. Just because a kid may have a lousy father or something doesn't mean that he's a lousy kid either. Don't hold somebody responsible for the actions of somebody else, you know, close to them. Notre Dame, this should never be considered about this whole, you know, losing Brian Kelly. I think that's ridiculous. The committee, I think, have actually done a good job this year until Gary Barta opened his mouth and said that on Tuesday. And again, this may be all about nothing. We may not have to worry about this weekend, but just the fact that you even think about that, the fact that you put that out there on Tuesday night, just shows how ridiculous this whole process is. Mike Greenberg always says, you know, at that point it becomes like a figure skating competition where you just have people, right, like any sort of competition where you have judges that grade you, and it's up to them. You know, diving, any like a lot of the various like Olympic sports or whatever, when you have these judges or you watch any of these game shows, you at home may think like, wow, this person has a great voice. But if none of the judges like, you know, they don't like their singing voice, they're not going to pass them on. It's down to those select people that are making the decisions instead of what you're actually seeing, the results on the field. We would be turning this into some sort of judging competition where you ignore the data from the games being played, and it's just the committee in the room saying like, yeah, but they're not as good now without Brian Kelly, so forget what they did this year. We're going to exclude them. By the way, Notre Dame promoted defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman as their next head coach, making that official last night. I think it speaks to Brian Kelly leaving for LSU because Marcus Freeman may be a really good coach. 35-year-old defensive coordinator has never been a head coach before, but he's, you know, the players love him. He's a good recruiter. He's done a good job with the defense there at Notre Dame. He may turn out to be a really good coach for Notre Dame. But the idea also maybe being he was the best option for Notre Dame. We heard about a Luke Fickell. People wanted to speculate about, you know, Urban Meyer. But maybe those big coaches weren't interested in Notre Dame for the same reasons that Brian Kelly left. Now, the last time Notre Dame promoted their defensive coordinator, who'd never been a head coach before, didn't quite work out. That was Bob Davie in 1997, and that was a bit of a disaster. He was the defensive coordinator. Holtz retired. They said, we'll just make Bob the new head coach. And he lasted about 4 years, and it didn't work out. We'll see if Freeman works out any better. By the way, that reminds me, when we were on the bus heading to Asheville, I traveled with the Citadel basketball team. I traveled with the team this time, and we were on the bus, and the coaches, you know, I sit in front with the coaches, and they were talking about the Notre Dame job search and Brian Kelly and the different coaches, and they were trying to run through in their head the coaches over the years. You know, like, when did Brian Kelly get there? Who was the coach before him? And then who was the coach before him? And I had to help fill in some of the blanks for them and tell them, they hired Ty Willingham that year. And then they said, who was the coach between him and Lou Holtz? There must have been another coach. I said, yeah, it was Bob Davie. And they said, you must be a Notre Dame fan. I said, no, I'm not a Notre Dame. I don't really like Notre Dame. I'm a college football fan. And my point being, this is not me trying to brag or pat myself on the back because I know the history of the Notre Dame coaches. It's just that it's always funny to me because I grew up with a lot of people who are very similar to me as sports fans. So it's always funny when I get into a conversation with somebody and I realize, like, not everybody is as obsessed with this stuff as I am. I guess that's what led to me being in this profession. It's also what they say about this profession, that when you have a sports show like this, you have to, I don't want to say dumb it down, that's not the right word, but you have to broadcast to, like, the lowest denominator. You have to assume that nobody knows anything that you're talking about. And a lot of times I feel like I'm being too obvious. Right? I'm talking about things that, of course, everybody knows this stuff. But that was just a reminder the other day that, you know, these coaches of college basketball, who they're all big sports fans. All we do on the bus is talk about, you know, have different sports debates. But they couldn't remember Ty Willingham or Bob Davie or what years they were hired. And I filled in the blanks and they thought, like, we got a Notre Dame fan over here. I said, no, I'm not a Notre Dame fan. I just follow college football. I don't remember this stuff. And I'm sure you driving around listening, you probably remember as well. And that's the great thing about us sports fans, that we can hang out and talk about Notre Dame coaches from the last 25 years. But it's always funny when you get into a conversation with somebody and you realize, like, not everybody has that same thought process. Not all of these people remember that Bob Davie was the Notre Dame coach from 97 to 2001. I'm just weird like that. I guess that's why I'm here, talking sports 3 hours a day. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Super Dave? Dave, what's going on? How are you?
All right. How you doing, Mr. Luke?
I'm doing okay. What's up?
Must be keeping pretty busy now. Basketball season's around here now. So,
yeah.
So I hope the Citadel did win. You know, I had to leave during the game, but I hope they beat UNC Asheville.
Well, they didn't, so they lost.
Oh, man.
Yeah, sorry to break it to you. They lost last night.
Dang. But I figured they would be able to beat them. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Unfortunately, they didn't.
What do you think? Last night, the baseball league now is acting up. Now they're going on strike, too.
Yes, they
locked
up.
There may not be any baseball played. And if they do that, I hope the NFL goes and plays the rest of the spring and summer.
Yeah, we'll see.
How about that?
Yeah, how about that? What do you think? You think that this baseball lockout is going to be a long-term thing?
It sure sounds like it, but
uh-oh.
If they do that, I would say to the NFL people, think about doing some kind of sports during the summer and have football league all year.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the NFL, they don't need that, and they wouldn't benefit from that, but they would give an opportunity to the USFL, which is coming back. Right now, there's your opportunity that you have nothing to compete with come spring into the summer, once college you know, after you get past March Madness. Whenever there's a lockout, there's always a chance that things, you know, it could get ugly, it could last for a long time, it could affect the upcoming season. The good news is we're only in December. December just started. You know, the season isn't supposed to start till April. You got whatever that is, 4 months. But as we referenced earlier, right, I mean, 94, you missed the World Series. You couldn't get things figured out. You missed a World Series. That was middle of the season. The NHL, right, 2004, couldn't get things figured out. They missed a whole season. So anytime you go into a strike or a lockout, there's always that risk or concern of how long-term is this going to be? Is this going to impact the season? Is it going to push the season back? Is it going to be a shortened season now? Are we not going to have a season? You have no idea how long these things are going to go on for, especially in baseball, where these two sides really do seem to dislike one another, right? The the Major League Baseball office and the Players Union or Players Association, they really never seem to get along. Now, Rob Manfred, I know, spoke with the media today as part of all this, and I just saw the quote online that he said, "The most negative reaction we have is when a player leaves in free agency. Making that available earlier, we don't see that as a positive." The players are fighting for that free agency. You know, baseball, the one thing about that's crazy about baseball, you get these big contracts that are guaranteed, but because of arbitration, you have to be in the league for about 5 or 6 years before you can actually make big money, get some sort of long-term contract. So the players want to change that and say, this is ridiculous. No other league is like that. I got to be in the league for, 5, 6 years before I can get that big payday. Aaron Judge was getting MVP votes and making, $500,000 a year. He was making nothing because he was so early on in his career. You know, in the NFL, the draft picks get these huge contracts. You're drafted before you even play a game. You're signing for millions. They had to curb that after Sam Bradford 12 years ago. But in Major League Baseball, in the minors, you don't make a whole lot. You get nice signing bonuses if you're drafted high or you're an international free agent that a lot of teams want. You'll get paid, a nice signing bonus. But your actual salary will be low in the minors. Then you get to the big leagues, and you're going to make, the Major League Baseball, the minimum salary, which is a good salary in the real world. But in baseball, compared to what other guys are making, you have to wait, 4, 5, 6 years before you can get some sort of big long-term contract, typically. So that's where Manfred and Major League Baseball's their stance is, saying, we don't really want to change that. We don't want guys moving around that freely in free agency. And the players are saying, give us a chance to make some more money or hit free agency earlier instead of all this team control. By the way, I thought it was kind of funny. It was very petty. It's kind of like immature. But last night, as soon as we hit midnight, if you go to the Atlanta Braves website today or any other team website or MLB.com, they did two things. They took down all the stories involving players. So with all of these transactions, all these free agent signings, if you went to MLB.com or the Braves.com yesterday, during the day yesterday, right, those would be the top headlines, that the Braves signed this player and they did not tender this guy and yada, yada, yada. Well, they took all those stories down at midnight. So if you go to any of these websites, there are no stories about any of the players. It's all about, the greatest five top Braves of all time, all-time stories like that. And the other thing they did was they took down the players' photos. So if you click on the roster or you click on, Freddie Freeman's MLB.com page, right, they took down all their photos. And it's my understanding that that is not part of the – that was not a necessity because of the lockout. That's just Major League Baseball. As I was told by someone who covers the sport, that was just them being petty. They went into this lockout, and they're almost, for the time being, right, trying to, wipe off all the players. No photos, no stories, no information right now. It's a lockout. You're not part of the league until we get this thing figured out. I just think it's kind of funny. It's petty. It's like the actions of, 13-year-old. But that's what Major League Baseball is doing to start this whole thing. We'll see how long this lockout goes for. You hope it's not that long. You hope it doesn't affect the season. But anytime you hear the word strike, lockout, you have no idea. The NHL went into a lockout in 2004. They probably didn't think it'd be that long either. Next thing you know, they missed a whole season, and I don't think the sport really has recovered since. Major League Baseball missed a World Series in 94 because the players went on strike and they couldn't get things figured out in time. So it's something that probably won't get a ton of attention because we're in the middle of a football season, and baseball always has these issues with the two sides butting heads. But anytime any sport goes into a lockout, goes into a strike, it may not be anything. They may get it figured out, this month, or this could drag on for a long time and affect the upcoming season, which, of course, is always the worst-case scenario. But the NFL, that doesn't make a difference to them. Maybe the USFL, right? Maybe some sort of spring league can benefit from if that becomes the case. All right, we'll catch up with Paul Charchian when we come back, talk about the football weekend, help you set your fantasy lineups, get set for Thursday night football. We'll do it all with Charchian when we return. It's the More Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today? It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with Paul Charchian to talk about this weekend in the NFL, help you set your fantasy lineups, get ready for Thursday night football tonight, and everything else as we do every Thursday with Charge here in the Moore Midday Show. I was talking about the playoffs committee and the final four teams in college football. What would things look like in the NFL if we decided the playoff format the same way? I think I would have the Cardinals as the number one team. The Patriots, number two. Packers would be number three for me. The Buccaneers, number four. And I would really want to put in the Chiefs, but have them at number five for the same things I argue about for college football, that the games have to matter. And while I think the Chiefs are coming around, the games have to matter. And they have lost more games than all those other teams I mentioned, so I can't put them ahead of the Buccaneers, Packers, or even the Patriots, who have a better record, or certainly the Cardinals. We'll circle back to that coming up. But at this time every week, we always catch up with Paul Charchian to talk fantasy football, help you set your lineup, also just get set for the football weekend, including Thursday night football tonight. You can check out guillotineleagues.com for Charch's free player rankings, and also follow him on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. He joins us every Thursday, and he's with us now. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing well. Great to talk to you again, Luke. We missed you last week.
Yeah, appreciate it. Good to catch up. It's been a while. Let's dive in with Thursday night football tonight. Saints, Cowboys, you know, from a standings perspective, two teams that really could use a win. From a fantasy perspective, two teams that have been missing some pieces lately. So let's go one by one here to make it easy. For the Cowboys, what do you anticipate in terms of what they'll have out there, how good the players will be, and what sort of matchups do you trust in this game tonight with the Saints?
Well, for the first time since week one, we should have all of the wide receivers for Dak Prescott. And it's part of why I love Dak Prescott this week. And he's my number one ranked quarterback for the week. So gets Amari Cooper back, expected to play. Should get CeeDee Lamb back and Michael Gallup all together here. And that's, they will overrun a struggling secondary. And there's good matchups all over the field for these guys. Marshawn Lattimore at one point was one of the best prospects, young prospects at cornerback, and he slipped a lot. In fact, he's allowing the most yardage of any cornerback in coverage. So a lot of good opportunities for Dak Prescott. The more interesting part on Dallas, Luke, they got to make the change at running back. Zeke's just not that good, and Tony Pollard is. Every metric, Tony Pollard's better. You know, whatever you want, yards per carry, yards after contact, long gains, elusiveness, whatever you want, Pro Football Focus ranking. Pollard's the better back, and sooner or later, they need to make the change. And we've been saying it for 2 years now. I understand the contract's a factor, but maybe this game against the number one ranked run defense is going to be the thing that sinks Zeke, and they've got to make a change. The Saints are giving up just 3.4 yards per carry. Luke. And so maybe Zeke struggles here and they start flipping that 70-30 workload to the other direction, 70-30.
I saw you tweet about Zeke earlier this week. Are we in sabotage drop area here with Zeke? are you to the point where maybe you move on from him totally?
Yeah, I'm not going to drop him outright, although it's tempting. I mean, the point of a sabotage drop is you drop a guy that somebody else is going to use equity on and then start and then struggle with the starts. They're going to start somebody who's going to hurt that team. And the Cowboys have one of the hardest matchups, strength of schedule matchups left over the course of the remaining parts of the season. In fact, I'm going to just quickly pull it up right now. Cowboys, there we are. They rank 25th. They have no easy matchups left. They have the hardest matchup in the league this week. Then they go Washington, a good run defense. Giants are good. Washington again. Arizona and Philadelphia. Arizona is the only one that's reasonably positive. So yeah, it'd be super ballsy to drop Zeke outright here. But man, I wonder if you didn't do it, somebody else is going to start him a lot, and they might suffer because of it. It'd be incredibly bold, but I like the idea.
On the flip side tonight for the Saints, Kamara, I believe, still out. They're down their two starting tackles as well. We got Taysom Hill starting tonight for the Saints. A lot of moving pieces. Do you like anybody on New Orleans side for this game tonight?
I really don't. You know, Ingram's tempting because he's going to get a lot of work here. But as you mentioned, both starting tackles are out. And Dallas is they're middle-of-the-pack run defense, but they've given up 5 rushing touchdowns in the last 6 games. You might think Mark Ingram, rushing touchdown. But complicating matters is Taysom Hill eats up the rushing touchdowns. In his 4 starts last year, he averaged a rushing touchdown per game. You know, that's Derrick Henry territory, a rushing touchdown per game. So, you know, that's a real consideration here as well, and why I'm not crazy about Ingram. I don't like this whole offense has been bad. I think it's going to be bad, and it should be. I mean, look at the Saints. Luke, they're without their starting quarterback, their number one quarterback, their number one wide receiver, their number one running back, their number one tackles are both out, and their number one tight end is out. You know, you can't be a functional offense very easily with all of those strikes against you. And I don't see much coming here. You could try Taysom Hill, but the problem is his arm's not going to help you, especially not against a good Dallas secondary. And I can't even guarantee you that he finishes this game. I mean, they've seemed awfully hesitant to even name him the starter. If he passes as badly as he does sometimes, I worry that Trevor Siemian's in by the end of this thing.
Yeah, I know Taysom Hill, fantasy players can, you know, they usually get excited about his potential. But yes, we'll see about tonight with this matchup. Let me just vent for a moment on the subject of Zeke and these running backs. This year, I imagine most leagues, if you look at like the top five picks in the majority of leagues this year, each of those top five picks are either injured right now or have been injured or have underperformed. It is hard to trust any of these running backs. I think I'm going to just get to the point where I take a bunch of backups waiting for these injuries. What do we do here with this running back position where every week it seems like these stars are going down? You can't count on anybody in fantasy football this year at the running back spot.
People just got to stop taking running backs in the first round. I mean, it's ridiculous. So Christian McCaffrey, I'll give you the order these running backs are taken in the first round. Christian McCaffrey, disaster season, second year in a row. Dalvin Cook, sidelined three different times this year. Derrick Henry, season ended in week 8. Alvin Kamara is going to miss a month of time. Nick Chubb has missed 3 games. Zeke, deeply underperforming, as we just talked about. Saquon Barkley, his last touchdown was in week 4. His last game with more than 57 rushing yards, which is nothing, was 2019 for Saquon Barkley. Jeez. And then there was Cam Akers, who was going at the end of the first round. He was dead before the season started. The only running backs that have come out of the first round intact have been, and not all these guys were even taken in the first round, Jonathan Taylor, Austin Eckler, Aaron Jones. That's it. Everybody else, disaster. And the non-runners, Luke, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, Travis Kelce, they've all been fine.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Let me ask you about a couple of guys that, I don't know, maybe could be options. I mean, Jamal Williams, we always overreact to standalone games. So everyone's sitting at home watching Thanksgiving, and Jamal Williams played pretty well for the Lions on Thanksgiving. Is he somebody at the running back position you can trust at all right now moving forward for the winless Lions?
Yeah, well, this week, yes. And I've got a starting grade on him this week because he's going up against Minnesota. This has been a run defense that's struggled. But I'll note this. It looks like the Vikings are going to get both of their starting tackles back. And so that changes things a little bit on Jamal Williams. But he got almost every running back touch last week on Thanksgiving after DeAndre Swift went down. So just through sheer volume, I think he still has a pretty good game here. And that might be your angle on Williams. So, yes, I've got a starting grade on Williams, and I kind of like him here. And if you need a different running back to maybe pick up off the waiver wire, how about Boston Scott against the Jets? I mean, any running back against the Jets, but Miles Sanders and Jordan Howard dinged up. Scott's getting a lot of carries. He's had a double-digit carries in 4 of the last 5 games.
Yeah, interesting. Sticking with that running back position, they're on a bye this week, so this isn't necessarily a question for this weekend, but the Titans, they try, you know, they have, since Derrick Henry's gone down, they've had a cycle of guys in that backfield. Hilliard had a good game. I think it was Foreman was the other one. Are you buying anybody in the Titans backfield that we can trust here or coming down the home stretch?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm a little bit curious on both of those players, but we don't know how that timeshare is going to pan itself out quite yet. Offensive line's been dinged up a lot. Hopefully he comes back more healthy. Foreman to me is way more intriguing because of his size and the goal line ability that he should have than Hilliard. Hilliard's more versatile of the two. He should be able to catch better of the two. So I still think Foreman's the better play. He got 19 carries last week, turned it into 109 yards. I had a 30-yard gallop in that one. So I tend to prefer Foreman of the two, but I think they're both rosterable, and we know the Titans, when they can run, they will run.
Talking with Paul Charchin on Twitter, @PaulCharchin. Check out GuillotineLeagues.com for his free player rankings. The Chargers, let me ask you about the Chargers, because early in the year, we were talking about Justin Herbert as an MVP. Mike Williams was a top two wide receiver for a while to start the year. This offense now has been pretty inconsistent. Didn't look good against the Broncos on Sunday. Where are you just as a whole, in general, on the Chargers offense right now here heading into December?
I'm still pretty optimistic, and I really like Justin Herbert in this matchup against Cincinnati, although their secondary has been better than expected. Still think Herbert, for the various ups and downs he's had, we have had really consistent production out of Austin Eckler, of course, and Keenan Allen, other than touchdowns, has been really consistent as well. I think Williams has been the guy who's been really weird. And the hard part for fantasy players, they throw to all three of their tight ends. If you were to combine all of the Chargers' tight ends into one guy, you'd have Travis Kelce in production. But they split it up three different ways. And that makes, from a fantasy standpoint, you feel like they don't have any good players at tight end. But in actuality, they do. It's just they're spreading it out evenly between their three guys. So I'm still pretty optimistic. I got Justin Herbert way up at quarterback number three this week.
You can find those free player rankings at guillotineleagues.com. As always, I ask you the two main questions. You gave us Boston Scott already, but any other sleepers out there that guys can still grab on the waiver wire at any position for this weekend?
So the Raiders' backup tight end, Foster Moreau, is probably the best backup tight end in the league. He filled in for Darren Waller once earlier this year. They threw to him six times, Luke. He caught six for 60 yards and a touchdown. Hmm. Every tight end against Washington who has been targeted five or more times has topped 50 yards and or scored a touchdown. They've given up tight end scores in two of the last three games. So Foster Moreau is one of my favorite sleepers. And if you need a quarterback in this bye week, how about Houston quarterback Tyrod Taylor? Colts have surrendered the most passing touchdowns, and opposing quarterbacks have thrown multiple touchdowns in eight different games this year. And he can be helpful on the ground. We've seen Lamar Jackson, Ryan Tannehill, Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence combined to average 7 yards per carry against the Colts. If Tyrod Taylor is going to run the ball like, 7, 8, 9, 10 times, that 7 yards a carry, that adds up, and he put up some meaningful rushing numbers there.
I like it. On the flip side, somebody that because of the matchup this week, you may not like him as much as maybe you normally would this weekend.
Patrick Mahomes. So, I mean, it's a story unto itself, really. Four of his last five starts have been epic duds. And bad. Other than the nationally televised Raider game in which he threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns, take that one out. In those four, the other four games surrounding it have been complete disasters for him, where he's averaged out to be fantasy quarterback 21 in those games, averaging half a touchdown pass. That's it for Patrick Mahomes. So you think it gets better against Denver? Well, maybe not. Denver's been a shockingly competent pass defense. They haven't given up more than two touchdown passes to any opposing quarterback. Mahomes, in last year, threw 1-1 touchdown against Denver, and they were worst pass defense then. This is a non-trivial matchup for Mahomes, and it's a tricky one. And I don't think you automatically start Patrick Mahomes. You may have a better option as your, quote, backup quarterback.
That refreshed my memory. So two last ones before we let you go. The Rams. Does Stafford and company get back on track against the Jaguars this weekend?
So the snappy answer is, well, it's the Jaguars. Of course
right.
They will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but actually, the funny thing is, Jaguars have been kind of good, which is weird. It's not great, but they've been a competent defense. They're doing really good run defense. Over the past four games, opposing quarterbacks against Jacksonville are averaging 202 yards and 0.8 touchdowns per game.
Hmm.
And the funny thing is all four of those passes are competent quarterbacks who dramatically underperformed expectations. So, while it seems like you go, well, of course Matthew Stafford's going to bounce back against the Jaguars, it might not be that obvious, and maybe he does. And I know statistically he had a pretty good game against the Packers in the box score sense, but if you watch the game, he's still not sharp right now.
No, he hasn't been. I mean, pick six now in three straight. They haven't looked right since Robert Woods got injured. And the other one I want to ask you about, the Seahawks along the same lines. Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf. I mean, are we even playing those guys at this point with what we've seen from this offense?
We're dropping Russell Wilson outright.
Wow.
Last week was his last best chance for a big game because it was against a terrible Washington secondary. And now there's no good matchups left on the schedule, including this week. San Francisco, since week three, the average passing game against the Niners is 200 yards and 1.3 touchdowns. And since week three, Russell Wilson's average game is 202 yards and one touchdown, which puts him on 101 yards and a touchdown per game. That's it. That's it. I don't like this matchup at all. And as good as we know DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett can be, we've seen them both struggle badly here. No running game, bad offensive line. Russell Wilson wanted to leave in the offseason, and he was right. He should have left in the offseason. This team will be melted down for parts in the offseason. I just did Philadelphia radio. They think Russell Wilson's their starting quarterback next year.
Hmm. Yeah, certainly something to keep an eye on wherever he may wind up next year. He's Paul Charchian on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. Get his free player rankings at guillotineleagues.com. One of the best in the fantasy world. And Charchian, we always appreciate you joining us. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you, Luke. Talk to you later.
All right, pleasure's all ours. Paul Charchian, who joins us every Thursday to help you set your fantasy football up. And get ready, even as I always say, even if you're not a fantasy football player, just the inside box that gets you ready for the NFL weekend with the interesting numbers of matchups, such as how many people realize how good the Jaguars' pass defense has actually been as Stafford and company try to get back on the right track this weekend for the Rams. Appreciate the time, as always, from Charch. Get to him on Twitter at Paul Charchian and his free player rankings online at guillotineleagues.com. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. Circle back to what I was getting into at the top of this segment and conversation. If the NFL used the same playoff structure as college football, what would that look like right now? We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. So blue, just thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree.
We're having hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Paul Charchian. Got us ready for the NFL weekend and Thursday Night Football tonight to help you set your fantasy lineups. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. This may not be one of the most joyous Christmas songs, but I feel like this is one of the iconic Christmas songs. If you were putting together a Mount Rushmore, I don't know, this song may have to be on there or just missing out.
Now, which version would it be? The actual Elvis version,
yeah,
or the Porky Pig version?
Oh, of course, yeah. So whenever people think of the best Christmas songs of all time, they think of Porky Pig singing about a depressing Christmas. That's what we all love about the holidays.
I'll have a Christmas without you.
I think that sounds more like Bob Dylan than it does Porky Pig.
No, that would be like, I'll have a Christmas.
I don't know if there's much of a difference there. That's not a bad Bob Dylan. Porky Pig, Bob Dylan, sound the same. Yeah, I think you got to go Elvis.
Wait a second. Is Bob Dylan the voice of Porky Pig?
Oh, there you go. We may have just uncovered quite the conspiracy here. You got to go Elvis' version of Blue Christmas, though. I think that's tops. And by the way, this song was originally recorded back in 1957. I was wondering about this the other day. At what point did all of the Christmas traditions begin? I know this isn't something in the last, like, 50 years. I don't want to sound like one of those young folks that thinks, you know, everything was recent and about their generation. But was it, like, the 1700s, 1800s? Was it 1920? Like, when do we start with the Christmas tree and decorating the tree and hanging Christmas lights and even recording Christmas songs? What was the first Christmas song? And when was that recorded? That's what I want to know. When did some of these traditions begin for Christmas? Because obviously now, you're all about it. I mean, people start celebrating Christmas on November 1st. But what was it like 100 years ago? Did people go through the same trouble to get ready for Christmas? When did gifts start? When did we start giving gifts on Christmas? When did Rudolph be? I want to know all these things. That's how I'm going to spend the afternoon. I'm going to report back to you. And I'll tell you the origin story of all this stuff when it involves Christmas. Earlier, I was talking about the NFL. And if it was set up like college football, where we had... you know, a playoff committee, and the playoff field, where you choose the top four teams. What would that look like? And I gave you my list without much of an explanation, but I would say the Cardinals are number one. I think they deserve that number one spot. They're similar to Georgia. Look, Georgia's been doing this without their star quarterback. They've been playing with their backup. The Cardinals have been without Kyler Murray now for a month. He's not playing this week, and they're still in first place. So the Cardinals have been impressive. They have shown that they are a good all-around team, that even when you pluck away the quarterback, they're still winning games. And they've been consistent all year, you know, kind of like Georgia. Now, the Cardinals have lost a couple of games. Georgia has not. But the Cardinals have been consistent throughout. They have the best record. They've done it without their starting quarterback at times. So they deserve a lot of credit. Plus, they're also similar to Georgia in the sense of that idea that we need to see it before we can believe it. Maybe it's just me, but I'm a little, you know, when I think of the Cardinals, if I actually picked the best team in the NFL, I'm not picking the Cardinals. I think the Patriots would beat the Cardinals. I would take the Buccaneers over the Cardinals. I'd probably even take the Packers over the Cardinals. I trust Aaron Rodgers more. The way the Chiefs are playing, I don't know, neutral field, maybe I'd take the Chiefs over the Cardinals. But just like in college football, I always say it's the most deserving. And so the Cardinals, while I don't think they're the best team in the league, they definitely deserve to be the number one team because they have the best record, and they've done it without their starting quarterback for the last month. Plus, no J.J. Watt. A.J. Green's been hurt. DeAndre Hopkins has missed time. They've had a bunch of injuries. Young coach, tough division. They still have the best record. So the Cardinals clearly are the number one team in terms of deserving that spot. But I still don't trust them, like many may not trust Georgia just yet, until we see it first. The Cardinals have no history of winning the big game, of winning in the playoffs. I got to see it from them before I believe they really are the best team, but they have played like the best team. I would then go Patriots number two. Now, they're kind of like Alabama in this case. You could draw the obvious parallel from Saban to Belichick, but also, you know, two dynasties that are not at their best right now. This is certainly not the best Alabama team Saban has had, but you still trust that they're going to win the big games, that they are going to perform as one of the best teams. Now, the Patriots are playing like the best team in the league over the last 6 weeks. They've won six in a row by an average of over 20 points. NFL score league. If you're winning six straight games by over 20 points, right, that is incredibly impressive. You're obviously doing something right. I put the Patriots at number two. Maybe it's recency bias, but I think they've been the best team in the league over the last month. They have the defense. Quarterback's playing well. They got the best coach in NFL history. And so similar to Alabama, you just trust them in those spots. Is this the best Patriots team we've seen? Of course not. But when push comes to shove, I'm trusting Belichick to win a big game. I'm trusting Saban to win a big game, even if he doesn't have his best team. I would then go Packers number three. I have plenty of questions about Green Bay as well. But they also have been a banged-up team, and they've gone out there and have won almost all their games. They're 9-3. They just beat up on the Rams. So, as I always say, wins have to count for something. And the Packers at 9-3 have beaten some good teams this year. Rodgers has played like an MVP. So I put the Packers at number three. I put the Buccaneers at number four. The Buccaneers are 8-3, so slightly less record. Maybe it's because they won the Super Bowl last year. So for comparison's sake, you know, makes them look worse this year. Just they haven't looked quite right. Now, they're still winning games. They found a way to beat the Colts. But if you watch that game, I mean, they didn't play great. They were down double digits against the Colts, who's a 500 team. And they came back and were able to win. But Tom Brady has not played very well for about a month now. They've already had their bye. They've come out of the bye. They really haven't picked it up like they did last year. But the Bucs, I put at number four because I do think they're one of the four best teams. They also have the record. They won the Super Bowl last year. They would be deserving of a top four spot. And then just missing out would be the Chiefs. I really wanted to put the Chiefs in the top four, but I just couldn't justify it. I put them at number five. And the reason why I put the Chiefs this high is because of what we've seen recently. Just like in college football, a lot of times the committee will forgive an early loss if the team gets better. The Chiefs have gotten better. Their defense has allowed an average of 12 points per game over the last month. And you still have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid on offense. So in a big game, I still trust Kansas City. But it would be hard to justify leaving out one of those top four teams for the Chiefs when those other four teams have been more consistent and better throughout this year. And as I always say, I'll say it one more time before we go, the games have to count for something. Those other teams have performed better than the Chiefs overall this year. So I leave Kansas City out. They'd be number five. They'd be Notre Dame fighting for an opportunity to get in. We'll catch up with Lee Sterling when we come back. These picks of the weekend. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.